August 7, 2023. It's a Watt from Pedro show. Watt for Pedro show. Happy Monday. Start off training in. This is an excerpt. John Coltrane, November 22nd, 1962. Live. Then we have Benji Johnson with Freakishly Tall. I just got the part with Sue in Beneath the Underdog, Charlie Mingus's book. And 5'11", right? Whoa. Cut down the... Who was telling me about cutting down the tall tree? Oh, yeah. Tony in yesterday about horrible history. Because of those Estonian software engineers with their Skype invention, I got all the way from North Carolina. Benji Johnson, welcome aboard, Jet. Benji!
Brother Watt, thank you so much, man.
Absolute. Absolute. Fellow band member. Big brother. Was it last year that you did the tour? You came with your boy? Or 2 years ago?
Yeah, it was last year.
Okay.
It was actually right around the same, this same
I remember
week.
It was summertime, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So, Brother Benji got to witness my town in person with his son.
It's amazing, man. And not just witness it. I got the personal tour.
Actually.
Who should be the mayor of Pedro, man. Come on.
The last... one of the last cats in the boat because it got donated.
No! What happened?
Right in front of the pad. Well, I got 18 years, a lot of tours, a lot of gigs, kept me and the cats safe, so I'm not going to bum too hard, but yeah, had to let it go.
Oh.
I think it was 1:54 in the morning. Across the street, the neighbor's ring camera thing, yeah, it only took them a minute and a half, you know, pros. And about 10 days later, I recovered it. Everything sawed out, and so insurance company wrote it off. And another boat. Anyway, you got to ride in it. But so, hey, that's the way it works out. Could have been a lot worse. I could have been in that boat when it was donated, okay? Luckily, I was caught
through
my pad. Yeah, so I got to look on the good side. Look, I'm really interested, you being a Spirit of Hamlet band member and also that cat who... brought it together for the mix job and all that. So I'm curious about your journey with music. Can you bring your earliest musical recollection, please?
My earliest musical recollection was either my first birthday or my second birthday, and I cannot remember. I mean, obviously, I can't remember which one it was. I think it was maybe when I was two, and I was in a high chair. It was one of my first memories ever, but it's a funny musical memory. But I was in a high chair, and everyone, they put a cake in front of me, and they turned out the lights, and they sang Happy Birthday. Everybody sang Happy Birthday, and I started crying.
Whoa.
that was the music that I remember, but it's really like one of my first memories.
Well, maybe
and I think it's probably because they turned the lights out, but I think I was two maybe, but you know, that's as early as I can remember, but it's musical in a wild way.
Yeah. And maybe you were being honest with the verdict on their performance.
That was the early producer coming out in me.
Give it another try, Will. Give it another one.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway,
yeah.
Okay,
a
this
little,
pad you grew up
flat
in.
The back.
This pad with the high chair, was there also musical instruments?
There was, man. My mom, who is, God bless her soul, she's still with us, man. She is 93, and she had a guitar. We just called it a banger guitar, and it didn't have a case. It stayed in the front closet, and she had that guitar in the house, and she would play. She told me she learned three chords when she was 7 years old, and she could still sit down today, and you know, her hearing and her sight's horrible, but she could sit down and play you those chords and those songs, and from when she was probably, I guess, six or seven, and that guitar. Just an old guitar. I think my dad bought it 4 years ago. I've still got it, actually. It's a little Regal. I think it's called a Regal or a Kent or something like that, an acoustic guitar. But it was in the house, and she played it. Like, you know, we would mess with it, but it was always just sort of like, you know what I mean? It was sort of like, you know, she would get it out, and she would play songs. And And so we had that to just get out and kind of mess with. Like, I didn't know. I was the youngest of four, so once my sisters kind of got out of the house, there were things that were left behind, like, you know, their record collection and stuff like that. But that guitar, we would get it out every now and then. And my mom didn't know how to tune the guitar, so she would call my uncle, who was this really super badass traveling fiddle player. He would travel in those old, you know, those old bands, the bluegrass bands, you know, that would have like a, that they would have like the old station wagons, you know, where the stand up bass would stick out the window and there'd be nine of them in there. He would, well, from the time he was young, he would travel around with bands like that, you know, and he's a really good player. And she would call him on the phone and he would tune her guitar by ear over the phone. He would tell her, you know, nope, turn it some more. That's right. And so I remember watching things like that, but it was always my mom, you know, doing it. And it was never, I never really took guitar lessons, and that guitar was really, it was horrible to play. You know, it was like almost discouraging, but yeah, that was around my house, and her playing and singing, you know, was around the house from the time we can all remember, you know.
Well, let me ask you about school. Were you in the marching band or the choir, shit like that?
Man, I was in the band. We had two, our school years were kind of different around here because most schools go like 4 years per school and you go to three schools, you know. We went 3 years per school. We went to four schools. So the second school I went to, I think it was fourth grade maybe, or fifth grade. I think they kind of vetted you out for a year to make sure you weren't like a trouble kid or something, but then they would have to where you could join the band, I think, in the fifth grade. And so I wanted to join the band, and I didn't know. I had one of my sister's boyfriends played saxophone. That's the only horn that I had ever really seen in real life or heard. And it was really cool. And I was like, well, that's a cool instrument. So in the fifth grade, what I didn't realize was they had a point in the year, in the school year, where it came time for band classes to start and for you to like, you had to get your own instruments. They didn't really have school instruments. So you had to have one. And I saw kids start to like come to school with their horns and everything. And I was like, wow, I didn't know. Nobody told me I want to join the band, you know, and they had this, apparently they had this meeting, this big meeting in the auditorium, and they had a big assembly with all the students, and they did this sort of group exercise where they would play you a pitch and they would have you raise your hand if you thought the pitch was higher or lower to the pitch before it, to all the kids in the whole school. And I was probably jacking around with my friends. I don't even remember that meeting, to be honest with you. So at that point is where they weeded out a lot of the kids, like, oh, these kids don't have pitch, or these kids don't care. And then they invited all the rest of the kids that were really paying attention and really looked like they maybe had some sort of tonal, you know, thing to join the band. And I never really got that memo because I wasn't paying attention. So my parents actually, I told my parents, I was like, band class is starting. And I think they told me that. They talked to the people at the school or the instructors or whatever, and they told me that. And I was like, well, can I still be in the band? And they were like, yeah, because you want to be in the band, you can. So, yeah, I joined the band, elementary band, in fifth grade, and I played fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth grade, like through junior high school. And then in ninth grade, I started playing football in ninth grade for the junior high school, and football was like the first athletic season, so you had to haul, and I rode my bike to school, you know, so you had to haul everything with you, man. I had, you know, I'm riding down the street at, you know, 7 o'clock in the morning on a 10 speed with a football helmet, a set of shoulder pads, and my books, and a horn case. And I was like, all right, one of these things has got to give. and it became the horn. And that
was it alto,
you know,
tenor?
It was alto. Yeah, okay, it was alto. Yeah. I had a Bundy alto sax.
Yeah, Bundy. What about the first record you bought with your own money?
first full record I bought with my own
money. No, I don't have to be full any kind of thing. It could be a 45.
Mm. With my own money.
Yeah, because you ain't got a lot with your kids. So that's why I asked that.
Yeah. So my own money, I want to say the first record I bought with my own money was, believe it or not, it was Don't Say No by Billy Squire.
And who was first gig you saw, first performance of music?
First performance of music I ever saw
Live.
Was John Denver.
John Denver. You gave me this music. Actually, you gave me this music a while ago, and it came up again, but this tune ain't, but Sonic Prophets. Let's play this.
Thank you. my pocket, but her heart was sharper than that. We were 20 in Harrison, with four drinks in the hat. Money ain't got nothing, ain't got nothing on me. As long as we're talking, I'm as clever as can be. Her smile grow as we pass candlesticks, and she peppered up to the sky as we pass the salty bridge. A pillow ain't no rest, no rest for me, but a kiss on my neck, and I dream the poet's dream. My woman in a book, my woman in a brave. I love her in San Francisco, I love her in L.A. My pocket, but her heart's sharper than that. We were 20 in Harrison, with four drinks in the hat.
Street lights mingle with the night trees, lighting up the leaves green. All other leaves all black and dark. And so I bike home, like for years I've biked home, underneath the street lights, underneath the night sky. I wish I could explain what it's like getting older, feeling things for years and years and years and years and years. Feelings harden into pebbles that I tumble in my pockets as I walk through the gardens at night. We take a bench tour of the gardens at night.
Pedro Show, that chunk of music started off with Sonic Prophets at the mercy of our pops, of your pop stars. Okay. I guess you'd want your own pop stars to be mercy of, but not yours. Eugene Chadbourne. are you talking to me from Greensboro?
Yeah, man.
Okay. Because Professor Eugene Chadbourne is. It lives there, too. And he sent me this tune this morning called The Immature Cult. And I put an excerpt. You know, his tunes can get pretty long. Psychobilly guy, people. Purveyor of the Electric Rake way back. But he's just down to acoustic.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. Scotty was telling me he played drums for him for some stuff. After that, from Anchorage, Alaska, Muskeg Mudsuck with Iron Fist. Tim Hill, Candlestick. King Style of the Week. Is that a band name or what? Erie Boulevard. Veda Hill Sisterhood out of Vancouver, Canada. Out of Vancouver, Washington. Watch it when you go on the I-5. You might get fooled going across the Oregon-Washington border. You haven't made it to Canadian yet. I wonder why they did that. Burst Neighborhood Song. Somebody you might know. Kim Ware, her band... Y'all are called Key Card to Juilliard. Juilliard, right? This is why Miles Davis left St. Louis to find Charlie Parker. I think one semester. Triola, brand new. Foghorn. MSSV. Oh, yeah, I got a tour coming up. 30 days from today. Baby Ghost from the 1900s off a new album. It's called Human Reaction. And then finally, Benji Johnson with Nana versus the Trees. Now, you know the thing about, okay, we learned about football winning over alto sax. So what about not graduating school, but afternoon when you get out of school? Do you get into the basement band, bedroom band, garage band thing?
Man, when the whole saxophone football thing happened, I think the sax probably sat in the house that whole year. And, you know, my mom was pretty adamant because they had paid. I remember that their payments were $17 a month on it. I don't know how many months they had to pay for it. But, you know, and you know, she wasn't mad, but she was kind of like, you know, need to do something with this thing. There's a lot of money, you know. So we went back up to the music store. And in the meantime, I had met a friend, a new kid that had moved into the neighborhood, and he only lived there like a year, man. It's like I've actually reconnected with him, you know, and just made him realize, like, hey, man, you don't only live in my neighborhood a year, but you are a massive influence. He had an old electric guitar and amp in his house. So we would go to his house and hang out, and it wasn't his, and he didn't play, but I would turn it on and mess with it. It's the first electric guitar I was really allowed to mess with. So when we went to the music store to see what we could do with the saxophone, we traded it in on an electric guitar and an amp. And that started the whole guitar thing probably around 10th grade, I guess, or summer between 9th and 10th. But I wasn't in a band. There wasn't a lot of kids. It was so odd, man, because you look at it now and –
Well, when I talk – when I say garage band, basement band, bedroom band – like, that's like me and D. Boone in the bedroom just trying to figure out songs off the record. So I don't know if you call that a band either.
yeah. I mean, I started learning from wherever I could learn from. And it always seemed like, of course, at that point when I was first starting out, that anyone that had an instrument already was better than me. So it was really hard for me to reach out and go like, hey, you want to play together? Because I didn't feel like I didn't know anything to be able to play. But there was another kid I went to high school with in the 10th grade, and he played electric guitar, and his name was Bucky. And Bucky was like, I'll teach you how to play guitar. And I was like, oh, cool. So he called me on the phone one afternoon. This is sort of the same thing you're talking about, just across the phone instead of in the same room, I guess. And he taught me how to play. He played his guitar over the phone. And it didn't sound like my guitar. It had distortion, you know, like it had like – it really sounded like the guitar off the records. And I was like, that's not you. That's not you know, my guitar doesn't sound like that. That's not you. Because he was playing China Grove by the Doobie Brothers. You know, bow-now, da-da-da-da, bow-now. And he was playing that riff, and I thought he was playing me the song. And I said, man, that's not you. I said, that's the record. He said, no, man, that's me. I'm playing that song. I said, it's not. And so he taught me how to play. That day over the phone, he taught me how to make a power chord. You know, put your finger here and put your finger here and then play those together. But he would play them on his amp and they didn't sound like mine. So I knew I had to, my amp was really clean. It was like an old Premier solid state amp or something. It had tremolo on it that was killer, but I didn't care about tremolo back then. I just wanted to rock, you know, so I had to eventually.
Hey, on the Bayou's got some fucking intense tremolo and it rocks. Very northwest bayou, but
right.
I read somewhere where John Fogerty said that was the only tune he wrote for Creedence from a jam.
Really?
I wouldn't shit you, Benji.
Wow. I know you wouldn't.
Okay, but that's bitching.
But yeah, I wasn't.
No, what I'm getting from this, because your mod learning how to tune from your uncle. Over the phone, learning China Grove, over the phone. The phone's intense in those days for you. So no like, bedroom thing, you know, no one-on-one in-person thing yet?
Not yet, man. I would play. Well, I mean, of course, then Bucky and I started going to school together. I think we had met maybe that summer before school started. And once we started going to school together, then we would get together and he would show me songs and show me riffs and stuff like that and sort of how things worked on the guitar and little walk downs and stuff like that. And then I would start to kind of identify. He would show me pieces of stuff and I would start to identify the sound that he was making with the same sound that somebody else was doing in a song, like in a real popular song or something like that. A guitar part, and I was like, oh, that sounds exactly what he was showing me. I just have to figure out, and tuning, and speaking, going back to tuning again, like, you know, when I started getting into it, tuning was a thing where, you like, I didn't obviously know how to tune the guitar. Like, if I was playing a song, most of the time my guitar, I was lucky if it was, like, relatively in tune with itself, much less to A440 or whatever. So you're putting your hands where the book tells you to put your hands or whoever to put your hands, but the D chord doesn't sound like their D chord. So I have to figure out a lot of that bedroom, just me sitting there and just shedding, learning how the guitar works and learning how if I'm playing in D, my D has to be in tune with their D, and then I have to tune the whole guitar. And then am I in tune or am I just in tune with that song? And then people started tuning like half steps down. So it really became more about, not that, but I mean, just part of it became more about how do I figure out how to tune this instrument properly. So if I'm trying to, you know, learn the mechanics of it and shed my guitar playing, I'm doing it the right way. And that was, you know, I talked to my son about that a lot, about like, that's a big, it's transposing in a weird way, you know, like, but it's also learning, you know, your ear gets really, really good. You know, I didn't have a tuner. I didn't have money for a tuner, you know, so we just tuned to the record.
I got really good
at tuning to the record, you know.
I got to tell you, to have that sensitivity, that to know you're out of tune, because me and fucking D Boone didn't tune for years. We couldn't even tell we were out of tune. We thought it was a personal thing. Some dudes like tight strings, some like them loose. We didn't even relate that shit to pitch. We were so retarded. Yeah. It's nothing to really be proud of or shit. Maybe that's part of why the Minutemen sounded like they did. Look, Benji, we're at the end, not the beginning, but the end of the first hour, August 7th, 2023 edition. Watt Peters, special guest Benji Johnson. Hold tight for hour two. August 7th, 2023. It's the second hour, Watt from Peters. Wow.
doing six. Song so new doesn't even have a fucking title.
Thank you.
Walk for Pedro show. Start off the second hour with Benji Johnson doing the Vast Waltz. Not just any waltz, people. And not the last one either. You know that pad in that documentary? That's where the Portal for Power guys used to prac when I was helping them out. I don't know, 20-something years.
Really?
Yeah, where Rick Denko goes, hey, this used to be a horror. And yeah, it's got all these little rooms in it and shit. Anyway, Tom Hall, after that dualistic ordering of events, has 56 miles from Pedro. One way. But it was worth it. They're beautiful.
Wow.
Dualistic ordering of events, Tom Hall. Mazinga, live. Song called Six. They just wrote it. They didn't have a title yet, right? Live, June 4, 2023. RO4 out of Tokyo with Imperfection, brand new. 100 Flowers, reissue. I'm Like You. Yeah, they tried to, they were called the Urinals, right? And so they changed their name to 100 Flowers so it'd be easier to get gigs. It didn't work. Went back to Urinals. Benjo-matic. Now, this is something I got to learn about, Benjo-matic, but later on. Shoot that pig. Okay, so when do you get in a band, Brother Benji?
Man, my first formal band that really we got all together, I was probably 19 or 20 years old. I was in college. And I had a kid that lived in the dorm next to me, a buddy of mine. He had guitar, and we taught each other how to play. I taught him how to play a lot of stuff, and we would get together in our dorm rooms, man, and we would just shed tunes, but we didn't have a band. And then a buddy of mine in college, another dorm person, you know, a friend of mine from college had a buddy of his that lived in Charlotte, which is about an hour and a half from our school. And he said, man, he said, he's a great drummer and he plays all this stuff. He knows all this stuff that you guys are playing. You should get him to play with you. And I was like, well, shit, I don't know him. You know him. You should get him to play with me. So he has this guy come up, incredible drummer. And at that point we were living in a house and it had a garage in it. And that was like my first garage band when I was probably 20, you know? And so it was me and him. There's a cat named Scrabby. Me and my buddy Scrabby. His name was Mark Scarborough, but they called him Scrabby, which is a great name. And then Gary was the drummer. And then we had a bass player named Brian Healy.
I gotta
and
say,
we
it's
didn't
a
have
bad,
a singer like a lot of bands.
It's got to be a better name than Scabby. Huh? It's probably a better name than Scabby or what was the other one I was thinking? But yeah, nicknames are bitchy.
Right.
Yeah, and you're right. A lot of bands don't have singers, right? Because you're playing stuff. Or were you starting to write material yet?
Man, I was. We learned covers, but I was all about, like, I wanted to write, and I wanted to start, you know, I wanted to write because it's just like, I wanted to see, number one, you know, can I do this?
Yeah.
And, but not having a singer, it was always weird, you know, back then. Because, you know, when I came up playing, the guitar player, there's so many bands that I listened to, the guitar player was only the guitar player in the band. You had a singer, you know, you had a lead singer. I mean, a lot of stuff that I listened to just didn't have the guy that played guitar and sang at the same time. And I never really fashioned myself to be a singer until later. And then, so I was like, we have to get a singer, you know, and there was never a singer. So we just ran tunes instrumentally, man. We would learn tunes down cold with no vocals and just learn them down tight, cold, and just run them. And then we got one of our professors in school to sing for us at a battle of the bands. And it was great, man. It was like, you know, that was like the gateway drug to all this stuff, man. And then we had a singer come up from Charlotte.
Are you saying that Battle of the
and
Bands?
And he sang with us at an...
Are you saying that Battle of the Bands gig was your first gig?
That was my first real gig, yeah.
Okay,
sure
okay.
Was.
Did you win?
No.
Oh,
but the band that won didn't play music like we did, but the reason that they won is because their singer, they were a three-piece, so they had a singer, guitar player guy, kind of like, you know, like D-Boone. But that cat could talk... And they sat down in little sections, and he talked to the crowd. And there was a part where his guitar came unplugged or his volume knob went bad. And he played it off so good, dude, and never missed a step. And I was standing there like, we're going to lose because this motherfucker knows how to work the stage. And it doesn't even matter how bad or good their songs are.
Not just work the stage, not just work the stage, but work the room because he was working the crowd, right?
Yeah, he really
so
was.
You're not
and
saying
I actually,
it was.
You know,
was it,
and I
was. I thought you were going to say like the contest was fixed, but he just had charisma, right? Okay, that's beautiful.
He was great. And
did
I
you
ended,
guys have a name for this band?
I ended up working with him in. That very first band was called. That very first band was called Backseat Romeo.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't fault me for that one. It wasn't my fault, but I did agree to it.
It's okay. Look, you gave me some more Beg-O-Matic. We got to learn about that later. Gary Busey, crazy.
The windshield, 10 years were airborne and rained entire out. A cup from Wendy's, a broken blender, a dozen roses. He had to say in her. She threw the perfume and then the ink pen and all his CDs. He shouldn't need them. They all had told her she'd be better. Cable bill, she hadn't paid yet, and then some tickets, they were for Broadway, she never knew that, she'd learned the hard way, she cranked the car, then she rolled her windows down, she stomped the pedal, and it never made that sound, then all the shit had crossed her brain to Gary Busey crazy. She never said that she would go without a sound. She liked the wind up while going out the window. She likes to watch it as it's blowing all around. She left his ass like she was Gary Busey crazy. She had a strong connection to the other side. They always said she was the sainter of the two. She went straight there without the motorcycle ride.
The man that flew all the way from the sun.
I'm the one, baby, yeah, yeah, I'm the one, me.
I'm the one, yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm the one. I'm the one, baby, yeah, yeah, from the sun. I'm the one, yeah, from the sun. I'm the one. Honeycomb, baby, honeycomb. Honeycomb, be my honeycomb. Honeycomb, yeah, 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 honeycomb. I'm the one, hey, hey, from the sun. Shining sun, yeah, 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 that sun.
Thank you.
devil man. He don't understand. He's been taking down pictures and hanging on sand. A devil man said, reach out my hand, 'cause tonight
for this one, it's like we've just got together and ran these tunes, you know. It's like we would just practice and practice and practice, and I don't think we never thought about a band name. I mean, you know, because we didn't have any gigs, and all of a sudden it was like, wow, we got a gig, we got to have a band name. So it all kind of got thrown around from other guys, and I was like, yeah, that's fine, man, I think that's fine, we'll go with it.
Okay, tell me about Backseat Romeo your professor singing. Did you do gigs with it like that?
We did one gig with him, man. He said, I'll do the Battle of the Bands for you just so you can get in, and we'll do it, you know. And he's funny. I still keep in touch with him, man. He was like an adjunct professor, so he was about 8, maybe 10 years older than me. But he was young at that point, you know. He's in his late 20s, early 30s. So he sang. He was like, I'll do this, and I'll show you guys, like, this is what you need to do, and I'll show you how to do a gig. Because he was in a band, but he played keys in a band, and then he would sing a little bit. So he just said, I'll sing lead for you if you can't find a singer. So that was fun, man. I mean, that was our first gig, and we did the whole thing.
He quits. You know? And now what does Backseat Romeo do when the professor quits?
We had two more gigs that we did, and we did them at a place. I went to school at Appalachian State in a town called Boone, North Carolina, which is a tiny town. It's not as tiny now, but it's still, you know, you ain't gonna build up the side of the mountains, so it just sits in a little valley and it can only get so big. But anyway, so we played at a little place. It was they had a nice stage in there, and, you know, bands would come through and play there. So we played two more gigs. And this was my first introduction to really dealing with, quote, singers. Like, singers get a bad rap, but I mean, you know, and some of them that just are, you know, like my friend used to call them stick singers, because they just stood there. They were just a stick. They didn't have anything. They didn't have a guitar or a bass. They're just a singer. So they just look like a stick standing on stage. So she would call them stick singers. So he was a stick singer, right? So he drives up. So the first thing is, he never comes and practices with us. We run all these tunes down cold. He's like, yeah, I know all those songs. And I was like, oh, great. You know, so this guy comes in. And I mean, man, he was the biggest rock star, you know, and all that stuff. And we go in and do the gigs, and it was just, you know, it was kind of a pain in the ass because, you know, we're all, you know, we've booked this thing ourselves, and we kind of want the, you know, and the guy shows up that afternoon, and I think we ran the set maybe twice with him, and we're like, okay, let's go do it, you know. And we did it, you know. It was good, but it just became like, you know, like we gotta. I was already dealing with the singer thing. Like, hey, is this guy gonna? Will he come and do another gig with us? You know, like he's gonna grace us with his presence. So, yeah. You know, once we all kind of graduated from school, that band kind of dissolved, and then I got into a cover band situation in Greensboro. I got cut. It's odd because, you know, you think back then it was all, it seems like it was all like, you know, Pony Express as far as communicating with people as opposed to nowadays, you know, but I got home and I'd been out of town for 4.5 years, never played in a band guitar. And I got a call a week later and there was a guy and he was probably in one of the bigger bands that got to play around there. And he was like, hey man, we need a guitar player. And I heard you're a badass. And I was like, the hell do you hear? I'm a badass. I don't even live in this town. So I went out and rehearsed and ran down like 35 songs with those guys. And then we played for 2 or 3 years in all the clubs around there. And I met a really good friend of mine named John Ray. He did the same thing. He called and said, hey man, I hear you guys are looking for a bass player. I was like, you live 2 hours away. How did you hear I'm looking for a bass player? Like, the guy just quit like 2 days ago and we don't talk. So he came down, played with us. It was amazing. And I just saw him 2 weeks ago again in Nashville. He lives in Nashville now, but he was just an incredible bass player, and he got me into the original thing, like really trying to write. And, you know, we had a singer that I didn't think was too great, but he was an incredible front man. Like, a guy was really picky on certain things, but he was a really great front man. And John was like, dude, I don't care how the guy sings, he's really, really good, man. We should just go with him. And I was like, okay. You know, so, and then when John got out of the band at that point, he went and started, he actually went and joined a trio in Charlotte. And I think they got signed to A&M like 8 months later. And so that was like, oh shit, this stuff is real. Like that can, the record deal and all that stuff can happen, you know? So it really, that really opened my eyes to a lot of stuff.
Yeah, but wait for the next part.
Right. Yeah. Yep.
Look,
one
I gotta stop
drops.
You here. Just for
one record.
Right. And getting to debt and all that shit. But.
Oh yeah.
We ran out of time, so gotta wait and continue on the next hour. People, hour two, August 7, 2023. Watt Peterson, special guest Benji Johnson. Hold tight for hour three. August 7, 2023, third hour. Watch for Pedro show.
She bought her brains by the bucket full. She used her chains from her pocketbook. She thought God blessed the other girls with something she'd buy new, 'cause she bought her brains by the bucket full. We'll be right back. you upsize to a bigger, better cup size. Nasty is not just a small prize.
Thank you.
Watch for Pedro Show.
Song.
Started off third hour with Benjo-matic. Yeah, Walter Becker didn't like it. He said it was retarded. I think Donald Fagen said it was dumb but effective or something. Anyway, Brains by the Bucketful. Another Benjo-matic. So we got to learn about this Benjo-matic. And Emily Dickinson and Crane. This is Crane's the last poem he gave me where he took her stuff and played acoustic guitar and sang to it. Rest of Night. Remember, Emily Dickinson wanted to be known as a gardener before a poet. There's a lesson there somewhere, people. Doug Wimbush, incredible bass man out of Connecticut with log drum. Beautiful cat. Big inspiration to me. Ratchet Orchestra out of Montreal with Wish Part 2. Shadow Animals, Can't Get Away From Me. And finally, Benjamatic. Suffer Time. You got to enlighten me. You know, I want to ask you how you got your studio going and stuff, but I got this urge to know what fucking Benjamatic is about.
So it kind of goes hand in hand. I'll try to make it concise. But I bought studio equipment. I started out just having a curiosity in it, and there were tape machines. I went and got a real job after college for a little while, but I made good money.
Oh, real job.
And when I was traveling, I had to. It sucked. It was great. It was actually a cool job.
Yeah, but why
cool
is it,
job, but,
why
you know,
is it music considered a real job? That trips me out. Because I work hard at this shit.
Well, it is now. I know, right?
I know we say we're playing a gig, right? But, man, you got to work at the shit.
Yeah,
anyway,
you're working the gig. That's right. Ain't no playing too.
Right.
So yeah, I bought some equipment and I bought some 8-app machines and a couple of little Mackie consoles, the little 1604s, and I started recording and understanding kind of all the things that go into that. And I always had a curiosity with it, and that's kind of how that whole thing started. But then I bought but then I bought one of those Pro Tools rigs, and it was called a DG001. And I bought a Mac computer probably in 99 or 2000 and I started doing that thing. And after I bought the Pro Tools rig, I was doing some other recording. I was doing some classical recording, which yeah, that's a whole other thing, man. I could go an hour on that. But when I bought the Pro Tools rig, I kind of had to figure out how this whole thing worked, but I didn't have any bands to record. But I had to figure out how it really worked before I recorded any bands, before I said, hey, come on in and let me charge you some money and I don't know what I'm doing. So I would sit there with Pro Tools. Yeah, right? So it's because I knew how to record on tape and I knew how to take those tapes and import them into Pro Tools. But recording directly into Pro Tools and just making sure I was getting it right was Pro Tools wasn't really what it has become now. It was very basic. It was like recording to a tape machine.
Oh, I
that you could
used
edit
it
on, but
I
the
used
editing
it in 1995.
Was
I used in 1997. I used version 1.1.1, and I just used it for sound effects, so you could move it around. Yeah, on my first opera, because the graphical thing, you could put sound effects wherever you wanted using your eyeballs. No more razor blades.
Yeah, man. I know, right? So I got that Pro Tools rig, and I sat down, and I started trying to use it and kind of figure out, like, I understood how to import drum loops off of these things called Acid. There was a software called Acid. I don't remember. Sony Acid was a looping software. And I started out with that, and it was Acid would take the – take the audio of the drum loops or whatever kind of loop you put into it, that would stretch it to time, sort of like Ableton does now, but it would stretch it to time, and it was pretty good at it for back then. And so I got into kind of messing around with that, and I was like, well, shit, I don't need a drummer. Like, I can kind of mess around with this stuff and figure out how the software works, and, you know, and we're all good. Well, by the time I sit down and I'm messing with all this, and I'm playing some guitar parts just to have some guitar parts down, I start kind of writing these songs and these progressions. And I was like, wow, this is kind of like I'm writing songs. And so I started writing songs and just playing everything. And I would get a guest player every now and then. Like, I would get a guest player to come in and go like, okay, I've got all this stuff in Pro Tools, but it doesn't have any drums on it. Let me see if I can overdub drums to this into Pro Tools and pull it off. Like the whole thing, you know what I mean? It wasn't like a whole live recording that was hinged around the band playing live or me getting it all right with the band standing there. I was like, let me start overdubbing. So that those songs, before I knew it, I had 6 or 7 songs written and finished with vocals and everything. And I'd started writing vocals because I just got tired of working with singers, man, just to be really honest with you.
Yeah.
I learned at that point I'm a control freak, and if I'm at the mercy of someone else's creativity to where my stuff goes, and it steers things away from what vision that I had for it, then I should probably just do it. And the other thing is, too, the reason I started singing and writing was if I'm going to tell someone else that their part is not good or their part is not what I had in mind, I need to be able to show them what I had in mind, or I need to be able to tell them, this is why I don't think this works. I didn't want to be the asshole in the band that just said, hey, man, I think your part sucks, and then not have anything for it. That's just completely counterproductive to me. So
I started writing. Can I ask you one thing, though? I'm curious. Did you ever check out a drum machine?
Oh, yeah, dude.
Okay.
I had an Alesis SR-16, and it would take me forever to program that thing.
Okay.
And
I wasn't
really good at programming them, and I would try to program them as if they were a real drummer, but at that point that I had that drum machine, I didn't know how to think like a drummer yet.
Okay.
But somehow the
software version of drums was easier for you. Maybe because of the environment, huh?
Yeah, it was, man. It wasn't, but it wasn't MIDI. Like, I didn't know how to do MIDI. I didn't know how to do anything MIDI. Like, MIDI was just all audio.
Yeah, it was just inside the Pro Tool world. I understand.
Yeah, it was just loops. It was like audio drum loops, you know, that would stretch to time or whatever. But yeah, so those songs that I started writing at that point, I played and sang and wrote everything on them. So I did. I tried to do like a Prince thing and just say like, okay, here's the whole tune. I'm playing it like I would read about Lenny Kravitz doing it. And I thought that was cool. And I thought I can do that. And if I'm going to fail at something, I would rather fail doing it all myself. And, you know, I wasn't worried about succeeding. I just didn't want to fail at it. And people would hear the songs and say, shit, man, that's really good. And I was like, really? I was like, you really think this is good? And they were like, this is really good. So I'd play them another one. They were like, is that you? And I was like, yeah, that's me doing everything. So I finished off those 6 or 7 songs with enough to make it a release of 10. And then I put out a CD. And then I put a band together to go start playing. And then that scared the shit out of me because I'd never been a singer on stage and play guitar at the same time, but I was just like, well, let's go. And I just did band rehearsals and put a band together and started taking out and playing it. And that's just sort of what I've done since then in different iterations.
This band was Benjomatic.
Yeah, that's what I called it.
Okay, can you remember the first?
I just called it Benjomatic.
Can you remember the first Benjomatic gig?
I can. It was in Burlington, North Carolina, and it was at this little thing where they had maybe 4 or 5 bands, and a buddy of mine that was playing bass for me at the time, I think he got it, maybe. I mean, I may have gotten it. I don't know. I may have gotten the gig, and it was in the parking lot of a Food Lion grocery store. It scared the shit out of me, man. Like, I mean, I'm just sitting there in front of people like, all right, I'm getting ready to play and sing these songs. And I mean, man, I was probably damn near 30 years old at that point.
Now, you ain't got the fucking Pro Tool rig doing the drums. You have a live drummer, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, live drummer, live bass player, and I picked up another guitar player because I would put guitar parts on the record that needed to be on the record as opposed to, like, who do I have in my band? You know, like this doesn't sound like me. You know, bands will come in here and record all the time, and they'll be like, I don't want to put a second guitar because we only got one guitar player in the band. And I was like, okay, well, if you can pull it off. But the song always needed what the song needed. So I picked up I got another buddy of mine to play guitar, to play second guitar. Mainly so if I screwed up singing and playing, I had somebody covering my ass on guitar.
Now, how would you rate that first gig of Benjamatic with the first gig of Backseat Romeo?
It was like two different worlds, man. I mean, my first gig with Backseat Romeo was my first gig.
That makes total sense. Yeah.
I was excited. I was scared, but I was excited because we had rehearsed and rehearsed and rehearsed and rehearsed. And with this band, I had rehearsed, but I felt like I was doing something that was like uncharted territory to me, you know, and it was something that I keep coming back to telling myself nowadays a few years ago, man, I just kind of stopped actively booking gigs. I said, if people want to call me and they want me to play, I'll come and play, but I keep going out and booking these things and just working myself to death to feel like I'm doing them to really feed my ego. Plus, it didn't feel dangerous to me anymore. Does that make sense? Like, when you go out on stage, I want something to feel dangerous, like new enough to where there's some portion of it that I'm flying by the seat of my pants, but it got to where, not that I was phoning it in, but it got to where when I would go out, it was so second nature to me. And I was like, okay, I'm here and I'm playing and these people are watching and everybody's enjoying it, but I don't feel like there's anything that I'm doing that's dangerous to me anymore. So I just kind of said, I got to have some danger back in it. And if I went and played another gig tomorrow, which I easily could, it would feel very dangerous just because I haven't done it in a while.
Okay.
You know? So
I want to play this other prize you got that you gave me. We start off the show with Sonic Prophets. Let's hear today.
Thank you. so big, I deal with you pretending like you don't need any kind of attention. I see the way you look at me sometimes. Feels like you're in the spotlight now. We'll be right back.
Swap for Pedro show. Last music for this edition. Started that chunk off with Sonic Prophets doing Today. Then Crenshaw Pentecostal. This is a Charlotte band. In fact, the bass man I know because I conked his pad last tour. Jeremy. You know this cat? Jeremy, the Million Dollar Movie Man. That's his regular band, but he just joined these.
Dude, cats. I know their drummer. Their drummer comes in here and tracks.
Okay, Crenshaw, okay. Pentecostal. Small world, right?
Badass, such a
competition
great,
to
great
Scotty
band,
Irvin.
Dude.
Okay.
Great band.
And we had Moon X after that with New Prometheus. That was Pretender from Crenshaw Pentecostal. Finally, the Sonic Prophets with Gonna Be All Right. That's very reassuring. I like that title. When do your titles come, Brother Benji, when you compose it? What is your composition process, by the way? Do you have a big trove of lyrics? Do you have a whole bunch of little bits on your leash where you do, what's it called, voice memo?
Man, it's from every corner of wherever it can be from now. It could be a title. It could be a, you know, most of the time if I get the, if a chorus comes to me, you know, I can stick it in a phone. Sometimes it all happens, you know. Sometimes the music and the everything just pops up in your head and you think, well, shit, that sounds pretty good. That must be somebody else's song. And then I rack my brain and I'm like, that's not anybody else's song. It's just, and so I'll put them down, you know, idea-wise, and then I'll have songs I sit down and I try to record like I've got it, and then sometimes it takes forever, and I'll have a whole piece of music, you know, done. But I don't know, man. I mean, that song that you played earlier called "The Reaction," that was last edition.
It's
a Sonic. That's the Sonic Prophet song, that's a band that I put together with a guy named Roger Kors, bass player, and a drummer named Kelly Pace. And that was, and my reason for putting that together is it was just like Benjo-Matic or any of the other bands. I kind of wrote everything, but I wanted to write it all in a rehearsal setting. So I stood in a room with the drummer, and we just banged out tunes instead of me writing them all and walking in and telling everybody what they're going to play or recording them without the people in the band. I did that one that way. And that lyric, the first lyric to that song is, "It ain't about the money till you ain't got none."
Sure.
And that was from playing with a guy who really wanted to go out and play gigs, and we did some duo kind of gigs with Benjo-Matic and him. He was an incredible harmonica player, and he would always tell me, you know, just book the gig, man. And I was like, well, it pays this much. And he was like, man, don't worry, it ain't about the money, man. It ain't about the money. And I was like, okay, you know. And then I would book a gig, and so I booked some gig that, you know, wasn't paying too great. And he's like, damn, man, what, you expect me to go out and play these things for free? And so that lyric, "It ain't about the money till you ain't got none,"
it's kind of like was a literally quote. The yeah, whole... it was a quote.
Yeah.
He's rapping out both sides of his mouth. You know, some people, they use language not to communicate but to put out a front. I hate that. I don't want to say that I'm cynical or disappointed in humans, but sometimes I am. Sorry.
Some days, man. Yeah. But some days you get a good song. You get a good song out of it. So.
Yeah. But is Sonic Prophet still going? Oh no, this cat didn't last, right? That you made the band sing about him. Yeah. Okay.
It kind of busted up. Well, that actually wasn't the guy that I wrote that about or got that lyric from wasn't that band that we were playing with. But the bass player in that band was Roger Kors. He played. Do you know a guy named Unknown Henson?
Oh yeah.
Do you remember the act Unknown Henson?
Yeah.
Yeah. So Unknown
dresses
Roger
up like Halloween.
Roger, the bass player for the Sonic Prophets, was Unknown Henson's touring bass player for 14 years.
Wow.
And played with me in the Sonic Prophets. And we did that record. He moved to Cincinnati. So we really couldn't. And it's one of those things where those three guys are really those tunes. So it's like I almost don't want to go out and play those tunes with anybody else except those three guys. So I don't know that you'll ever hear them. I could put a band together and go out and play them, but it just wouldn't kind of be the same. But
no, it makes sense. It makes sense.
But it is what it is.
No, it's about people. Unless you're like branded a name or something, you know. That's why I couldn't be Minuteman without.
Right.
I'll always be a Minuteman, but I can't be the Minuteman without D. Boone. I mean, just me personally. I'm not talking for other people. Or same with Edward, you know, with the Firehose in Georgia. You know, it's different people, different thing. That's why you give it. Bands have like kind of their own, like songs, right? They become like little people. What do you got going right now, Brother Benji? What's right now? What's contemporary for you, music wise?
I am writing a batch of tunes and working on them slowly but surely with the drummer. His name is Tim Heisman, and Tim works here locally, and he gets about a 1 hour lunch break every day. And Tim will come in. I'll set up drums and I'll set up a guitar amp. And if I don't have sessions or I can look down the calendar a few days, I'll say, hey, man, you want to come over for some lunch jams? And he's like, damn right. And we'll come over and we'll turn on. I'll hit record and he'll sit down behind the kit and we'll bang out some riffs. And I'll come up with an A part and a B part and maybe a bridge or a C part. And we'll knock it out literally within his lunch hour. And then he leaves and I've got drums and guitar for one tune that I don't know where it's going to go or what it's going to be. And I want to say we're up on 10 or 11 songs, and they're all kind of sitting in my lap to finish. The majority of them are, about half of them are probably 95% finished, but it's really cool, man. I'm playing a lot of fuzz pedals and stuff like that. So, and I don't know what that's going to be called. You know what I mean? It's not either one of those other bands, and it's not really Benjomatic, but we want to call it something. So that's really – I'm looking forward to releasing those really soon as far as a musical release.
Then let me put out the invite. When you get this done and you come up with a name for it, can we play it on the show? You come on and talk about it?
Of course, man. Of course.
Okay, because I'd love to have you aboard. We're kind of out of time now. I could talk to you forever, though, Brother Benji, truly.
Yes, sir. Thank you
so much for being here, and I can't wait to hear this with the lunch break jams. Yeah.
Yeah, man.
You know,
hopefully,
the music
is
beautiful.
I'll see you in Nashville when you guys are out on tour.
Oh, that's right. That's right. We're coming by. Okay. No, I think there's a Charlotte gig, right?
Is there a Charlotte gig?
I think there is a Charlotte gig. Go to MikeWatt.com. I know I got it there. I should go look. I should have this all memorized, but there's like almost 60 gigs, so sorry. But I think there is. And I think fucking Jeremy, who's helping that other band out from Million Dollar Movie, he's going to be on the bill opening up, too. It was Snug Harbor last time, but I think it's a different venue. I like that pad a lot.
Right? Okay.
Anyway, I hope to see you in person in October. Okay.
Yeah, bro.
Okay. But also, you come back on the show with this new proj, man. I'm chomping at the bit for it, please. People, it's been the August 7th, 2023 edition. What Peter Show came, you powder drive.